Busy city life makes it hard to think about and work at integrating our faith with our lives. Welcome to the Cathedral Podcast, produced and hosted by Jenny Ho Huan. Each episode, we want to help you relate core Christian truths to your daily life. Whether it's science, philosophy, cultural trends, or life stories, we bring you authentic and unrehearsed conversations to spark insight and strengthen your faith and your life.
Hey everyone, it's Jenny, and today on our podcast, we want to talk about our thought life, the stuff that goes on in our heads. And with me to talk about this is Jillian.
Hi, Jenny.
And Pei.
Hey, Jenny.
And myself. And the reason why I asked the two of them to come is because we are a team working together on a faith and life track in the church, which really is about how to integrate faith with various dimensions of life. And for all three of us, a very important part of that in our own journey and our conviction is the place that our mind plays in this whole thing. So let's get started, guys. Okay, the Bible says we should love the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, mind and strength. So we're going to zoom in and start talking with loving the Lord with our mind. What does that look like and what does that feel like?
I think one of the important things about, you know, the life of the mind is to engage fully, to not be afraid of going deeper, wrestling, asking harder questions that to some may seem almost a little embarrassing at times to ask in out in the open, and to do the hard work, to not be afraid of the hard work of talking with others, researching, taking courses.
But why? Why bother? Why bother with the hard questions? I mean, why not just trust and obey? Why not that?
Well, I think if man is made in God's image and we have been given a mind, we ought to use that mind that He has given us. And that means that we do dig in and try to understand the world that He has put us in. That's part of stewardship. That's part of the responsibility that God has given us, even as image bearers, to think His thoughts after Him and to reflect all that into the world that we live in.
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably add that as kingdom builders, we need to think through the building process. Just as you would with a building, you study, you plan, you map out, you ask questions of the project. Why aren't we, you know, why don't we do the same for the building of the kingdom?
Right, yeah.
I think we do it sometimes for maybe the defense of the kingdom, which we see in apologetics perhaps, but maybe we need to expand some of that into the general building of God's kingdom. You know, like Jillian said, we are Imago Dei, made in His image, given a brain, a purpose. Yes, and you know, we exercise that to the degree that He's deposited in us the skills to.
So I'm picking up two things here. First is the whole fact that we have the capacity to think beyond, say, maybe other created creatures. Certainly in Kingdom Animalia, we are the smartest. At least we think we are.
Sometimes.
But then also not just the capacity, but also that commission, because God has given us a commission to build the kingdom. And that is an intentional process that requires, like Jesus once said, if you want to build something, you have to plan. You know, so you have to apply yourself and you have to plan. So it's cool. So, but, you know, sometimes in church, there seems to be a little bit of a pushback about this whole thinking thing. You know, it's like, that's something the smart people do, the theologians. But the rest of us, the average ones of us, we don't really have to. Ours is more just a matter of like praying and trusting God. And how do you think we got to this place? And why is this not a good option for us as Christians? Is there some historical reason for us, you know, where we moved from, at one point in church history, the rational man was held in high esteem, like Augustine and Aquinas and all that. Somewhere along the way, things shifted.
Yeah, I think, not to go into a whole history lesson, but I think the Enlightenment had probably something to do with this, where reason, Enlightenment and post-Enlightenment, you know, where reason and reasoning, man's ability to reason and make sense of the world by himself without any appeal to the divine, pushed spiritual things into the corner and into the church, actually. And so what we had is that, well, if man is able to make sense of the world through natural laws and through his own ability, then why do we need God to make sense of the secular things, you know, like science or
law or ethics or morality even.
Christianity or spirituality became a very personal thing, a personal piety. And so there was a space for it, but it was just keep it to yourself, very subjective. And so what happened in the church was that Christians, in a sense, retreated into the church and left all these other areas of life to be taken over by more humanistic or secular ways of thinking.
Yeah.
And so you see that played out in the sciences or in the arts even, when very originally it was Christian thinkers and artists and scientists who even allowed these spheres to flourish in the first place.
And yes, historically we know that many of the first scientists and all that, they had a faith foundation from Galileo to Newton to Einstein, but somehow in presenting the scientific data, there was some kind of backlash, and that didn't help. That sort of reinforced the idea that the church wasn't really interested in this stuff, you know? And so the bifurcation of the secular and the sacred begin.
Yeah, I think it makes me think back to my own journey as a Christian and even my observations of us as, you know, of other Christians, us as a body. For me, I was very much a sacred-secular divider. In my own life, I thought that being in full-time ministry, serving the church was service, and exploring other careers, exploring other spheres, and to the glory of God was not really even on my radar. And as a result, I think I became a poorer steward of my studies, of my thought life, you know, and because I thought that what we needed to study was the Bible, was understanding of, you know, missions and pouring a whole life into that and rejecting the rest, you know. So I think my university days were not as well stewarded as they could have been. And even I think I went through a season of noticing that we would be afraid that knowledge would puff us up, you know, as it says in the Bible, instead of seeing the tension between knowledge to the glory of God and when knowledge does puff us up. And so just those are some of the things that I think I've walked through for myself, and also noticed that in the church, we need to be careful about pulling out the one verse in isolation and then living our whole lives off of that one verse and deciding based on maybe one standalone verse.
Yeah. Your story actually really illustrates this well. No? I mean, just pulling out a verse and then building your life on it, I mean, just reflects a little inadequate thought.
Exactly.
I mean, firstly, the verse has a context.
Right.
And in that passage in Corinthians, the word knowledge, if I'm not wrong, is the Greek word gnosis, which is a knowing that is kind of a very self-driven sort of knowing that's not coming under the knowledge of God, not coming in the Bible. Knowing is wrapped around by this idea of the fear of God. So that's a little bit different.
Yeah, and it is the fear of God which will guard our against pride.
Yeah.
You know, it's God has put in his protection for us, you know, in community, in leadership, and asking us to do nothing out of selfish ambition, to be submitted to one another, you know, to seek forgiveness. I mean, he's got all this to guard against that pride. But if we just say, ooh, knowledge will puff us up, run away, we will run away. And then I think we don't end up being the kind of stewards that we could have or should be, you know?
Yeah, I'm very glad that you kind of like found your way back, though.
Getting there. Yeah. Still got the pride.
Yeah, you know? Oh, well. Who doesn't have pride?
Right, exactly. So let's not keep that.
That's the queen of vices.
Keep us
from
searching and thinking.
That is true. I appreciate what you share, because I think that in that story, it also illustrates for us that because God made us so whole with emotions and thoughts and everything, he wants to redeem every part of us. That sometime in our journey, I think God will confront us that, hey, you're a little bit off balance, you're a little bit off center, and he brings you encounters and experiences that then pushes you in a direction that's probably a bit uncomfortable, but that's exactly what makes you grow. And thinking is highly uncomfortable at times, right? I mean, what's the most uncomfortable thought you've ever had, Julian? Well, this is not
maybe
a confessional,
that's not
but
really
it's not a confessional. But I meant just a theological idea that you know was uncomfortable for you. Like for me, I remember growing up in church, coming across the Trinity was highly uncomfortable because it was so difficult to understand. I was so frustrated that I couldn't understand it, and I had to come to a point where I had to bow before God and say, "Okay, you want me to use my mind, but you also want me to see the limits of my mind." And you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we were able to understand everything that was in the Bible or in the Word of God, then there's no mystery of our faith either. Mm. And so if God really is infinitely omniscient and wisdom, then we have to expect that we will not be able to understand a lot of what we see around us or everything that we understand in the Bible. And I think we have to be okay with that. Being in that place.
And yet hold
place.
The tension that we are still responsible to try to find out, to try to know to the degree that we can, you know, and not become lazy or take the softer option.
Yeah.
Yeah. But would you, what are some, you know, you used to teach in pre-university. So what are some, you would think, critical things for a growing Christian to have thought through in order to have a robust and authentic faith life? And maybe what are some, you know, Pei, you can chime into, what are some life habits we can have to say that, hey, I'm actually stewarding my thought life well. You know, are there actually actual habits that we can have? You know, when you tell a general paper student, you want to do well in your GP, you got to read the newspaper. So you know, that's the habit part of it, right? So what about for a thinking Christian? What would be some good habits and what would be some areas that we should think through and not leave others to tell us or just accept at face value?
I think one of the things is really understanding why we're on this earth and why we do what we do. And so it is about the meta-narrative.
I love that word. Okay, that is the word that means the big story, right?
Yes, it's God's grand story and how we find our place in it. There are questions that gnaw at us, you know, gnaw at our insides when we're... We're not, when we give ourselves space to think.
Yeah.
So questions like, why am I here? What am I doing this? What is the point of all of this? It seems so meaningless.
That's right.
But when we know the why, that bigger why, you know, that we find is answered as we understand our place in God's story, then it gets us through the hard times, you know, when we're in the dreariness of life, everything just seems so mundane sometimes because life is challenging.
Yeah,
right?
Or when you're in the valley moments of your life.
Exactly, and that gives us the reason to continue and to do it well even when we don't feel like it.
Yeah, good word. Especially for today. I mean, we are such a feel-good people these days.
I think we're dealing a lot with the what's and the how's these days. How do we get stuff done? What are the processes? What are the policies? What are the frameworks? Instead of why are we doing any of this? And if we don't revisit that often with our minds and reflect on that, enjoy it and remember it, I think we lose direction, we lose meaning and purpose, like Julian was saying.
I think, I mean, even my own experience of that was as a teacher of 6 years, I enjoyed being with the students, but at a point, at 5 years plus, I really had to ask myself that question. It's like, what is the point of sending these kids through the A-levels and then into university? And then they just go on to get a job and earn more money, and they do the same thing with their kids. And so what is the point of all of that? But when I began to understand that education is on God's heart and began to see his vision for it, then everything changed. You know, there was a reason to embark on these endeavors, and it was filled with meaning and purpose, and it was never about self and just my certificate and, you know, how much money I could make, but it really was all about God's kingdom.
That's so exciting, right? I mean, to really see your own tiny story that is sometimes so blotchy and plays that against a larger tapestry of what God is doing. It's so inspiring. It's so awesome, really awesome, like full of awe, because how is it possible that tiny old me can actually make a difference in this world, right? I think thinking about this is so important. And it's not just for the whole idea of doing great stuff. It's just even for getting through the mundane days, like why am I staying home with and caring for an elderly parent or a sick child or whatever it is, you know.
Or why have children?
Yeah, why get married? Why have children? Actually, yeah. These are very, very important questions we need to ask. Maybe we should just tackle one of them at this point. So right now in our society, something that is going downhill really quickly is fertility, right? So yeah, thanks, Pei, for prompting me on that. So apparently children are not much use these days in our pragmatic society. So let's tackle this. Let's show everybody how we think through this process of why we have children. And this is going to be tricky because both of you don't have kids. So I'm not going to answer the question. You guys are going to answer the questions. I'll tell you whether you're right or not. Just teasing.
So is your question why the two of us should aspire to have kids, even though we don't have any?
Yeah, sure. Yes, absolutely.
You know, honestly, one of the most impactful things that anyone ever told me, you know, in terms of mentors and books, was that having children are the most organic, beautiful way of sharing the gospel. You have a lifelong chance to disciple, to impact, and then as they grow and start to walk with the Lord, you send this quiver full of arrows, you know, as it says
beautiful.
In the Bible, out into the world to build the kingdom. I mean, we intentionalize discipleship and outreach, quote unquote, and this is from someone who hasn't had the pain of childbirth or the spank having, you know, but I've seen it in my family. I have two nieces.
Well, you don't have to have your own children.
And babysat a lot of...
You don't have to have your own children. The whole idea is to be pro-life. And,
yeah,
you know,
to celebrate it, to celebrate a next generation coming along. Mm-hmm. So even in discipleship and mentorship, I mean, I'm an instant mother to maybe some 16-year-olds, which is a bit different from raising from zero. But I think I see traces of that same idea of it is a joy. There's a lot of sorrow and angst and headbanging. But if you persist...
Heavy metal.
Yeah, they're headbanging in a different sense and yours in a different sense. Both senses, perhaps. But at the end of the day, I've seen enough parents persist and raise up a next generation that are maybe not afraid to lead a cell group at, you know, when they're young.
11 years old.
Yeah. And both of us have a friend who's trained their kid to lead a CG from the age of 11. Nice. And they're not afraid of it. They're thrown into the deep end. Their parents walk alongside them. They coach them. Mm. And they can do things like that. Or kids who know how to manage their money, you know, and at 16 they're thinking about, you know, what do I do with my money? It is a beautiful thing. And I think there is so much hope for having children, you know. And,
nice. Yeah. Now you, who will have the quiver full, come.
hoping to. So I think God is a God of generations and he works through the generations, as we've seen. I mean, just read the genealogies, right? And there is something about this thinking longer term. I think that is something that's beautiful and puts us in our place as well. Sometimes we think that, oh, you know, look at all the problems in the world. How am I going to solve it by myself kind of thing? But we understand that God has given us children and the generations may not be our own, but it's a long-term thing. And the problems are not going to be solved just by me and my generation, but I'm going to leave a legacy that will be passed on. And not that we leave them the problems to solve, you know, but it's something that's big enough and grand enough that will involve all these people as well.
That's nice. That's nice.
Yeah, it's a blessing to be called to be involved in something larger.
That's nice. Yeah. I remember one of the things I read that helped me along the way was, I think, Tagore, who said, children are God's yes to humanity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that he gave us that capacity to procreate, and God is not unaware of the fall, God's not unaware of our sinful nature, but God is saying, yes, continue. I love the human race. I've got this. Yeah. I'm sovereign enough. And no matter how messy it gets, no matter how the glory of God is still somewhere hidden in the human race, a glory that's unique to us, which we rightly pointed out with the Imago Dei. And I think we are saying yes to God when we participate in a very natural process that he has designed into life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a step of faith that you are saying, I believe that God's design is still better no matter what a mess we make of it. And we are saying, because we are people of faith, we align our lives to that design, even with the thistles and the weeds and the thorns and all that. And we believe that in the life of Christ flowing us, we can thrive in the midst of all these difficulties. So that's our composite answer. And I hope, guys, we illustrated for you a little bit of how, what it means to think through this in some ways. Yeah. Any final words about faith and thoughts?
Okay. Well, I think one thought I had is making a habit of thinking, which means it doesn't happen overnight, but it's we need to start intentionalizing, becoming more aware of how we're interacting with our world. Taking courses, having conversations, you know, rich, deep conversations, and not being afraid of those. Those are helpful. But even in the private times of, I think one thing that I've been trying to do is, even in my pain or injury, I want to celebrate how God has made the human body. So it almost, like last year, I had this terrible frozen shoulder that lasted for months, but I think it drove a journey of starting to study the human body a little bit, and the idea of health, and what does God have to say about that as the ultimate doctor and healer. He can do it spontaneously, but he can also very much use physicians and therapists. And how does all this work together? And the more I studied that and journeyed into that through walking through my injury, I just was floored. I think sometimes just brought to my knees, like, God, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. This is that took that verse to a new depth because of my own pain. And this is the God we serve, you know, and it's an honor to be able to ponder who this God is and what he means to us.
Thank you so much, Pei. Yeah, I think thinking that is birthed from places of pain is very different. It's not academic, intellectual thought. It's much deeper, and it always births compassion and empathy in us as well.
Yeah,
so definitely. The thought process, when we're committed to it, forms Christ in us as a character formation process too, and faith formation process.
Yeah, brings together all
of who, and the Lord wants us to use our mind to sort of connect the dots.
Right.
And
right.
Yeah, wow, nice. Thank you.
I think I just want to allay the fears that some people might have, or some misconceptions about thinking that people might have, that it's like, oh, it's only for the intellectual people. I can't think. Oh, it's too cheem. Can't understand. Mm. I was at that place at myself, you know, when I was thinking of going to university. My mentor said, don't do philosophy, you know, because it will ruin your faith. Stay away from these ideas kind of thing. And so there was a fear of thinking, because it's like, oh, will it shake my faith, and will it rock me to the point where I doubt and I, you know, lose this thing that's so important to me. But I think when we think in community, as was mentioned earlier, and we have that safety nets that God has already given us, the community to think, and when we realize that thinking is not just about cheem thoughts, you know, these airy-fairy ideas, but it's about imagining, it's about creating, it's about problem-solving, and just even asking questions or just digging deeper and just being curious about the world that we live in. That's all thinking. That's all about thinking and using the minds, our minds, to love the Lord as well. And all of us can do that, whatever our academic levels, you know.
Absolutely.
We don't have to be professors, you know, to be able to think. Everybody made in God's image is able to do that. And we don't have to fear.
Yeah. Totally. I so agree with you. My mom never had a chance to go to school, but I've seen in her so much wisdom, just the thoughtfulness that she applies to life that allows her to hold certain values that are so actually so godly, even before she became a Christian, you know. So our thought life is really important. It's a unique capacity that God has given to us that allows us to reach out to Him, to think high, holy, noble, wonderful thoughts, to imagine, to create, to join the dots, to ask. For me, a practical habit I have for my thought life is asking questions. So whenever I confront a situation, because I have a habit of journaling, I always ask myself a question. Questions such as, what is really going on here? Why am I feeling this way? What's beneath my feeling? What does this Bible passage really mean? Why is it moving this way? Or why am I unmoved by it? You know, just posing questions to myself then begin me on a journey of searching for some answers which otherwise would prevent me and cause me to just stay at the level of platitudes and assumptions that are not really questioned and studied. And I found that asking those questions have been quite critical. Yeah. And, you know, the psalmist says the Lord desires truth in our inward part. And that involves a journey, like all of you saying, engaging our thought life, asking questions, developing habits. Even like when you're going through life experiences, whether, especially painful ones, and taking a hard look at it. So on that note, I want to wrap up our time with good old Pastor Eugene Peterson's translation called The Message of Romans 12, verses 1 to 2, which is familiar to many of us because it speaks about the renewing of our minds as a core process in transformation of our lives. And here's how it goes. So here's what I want you to do, God helping you, take your everyday, ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work, and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. Embracing what God does for you is the best thing you can do for Him. Don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You will be changed from the inside out. Readily recognize what He wants from you and quickly respond to it. Unlike the culture around you, always dragging you down to its level of immaturity, God brings the best out of you, develops well-formed maturity in you. Thanks be to God.
Thank you for listening in. We hope you've been encouraged with some new thoughts on faith and life integration. You can find us on the Cathedral app, iTunes, Spotify, or at cathedral.org.sg/podcast. Be sure to join us again.